Sorry, I just
didn't like my question.
It's working. So, sort of anecdotally, what I can tell you is that you sort of got two things going on oftentimes at the same time. And remember, you know, people with ADHD are challenged in lots of different areas, so not everyone is going to be challenged with emotional intensity, for example,
mm-hmm.
Or with, you know, inattention. Or it's going to show up differently with different people. But what I've noticed is that a lot of times you'll have people who will be both really incredibly compassionate and empathetic on the one hand, and seemingly sort of distant or disconnected on another.
Mm-hmm.
Does that resonate at all?
Yeah, very closely,
okay.
Yes.
So what I've seen is that when I look at one of my oldest daughter, who's very much like this, she is the most kind, caring, loving person when she's paying attention to it, when she's noticing it. But 90% of the time, she's off in another world, and she's oblivious.
Mm-hmm.
So she's not really not thoughtful or caring. She doesn't even notice that it's a time or an opportunity where she might want to be thoughtful. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So is that sort of similar to what you're describing?
Sometimes, but sometimes she's like, yeah, I don't care about other people. And I thought, oh, you're not very nice sometimes. And my brother, I was having a conversation with him the other day, and he said, I just often, like they're something completely separate from me, and I just don't, you know, like, and he's done a lot of nice things for people and things like that, but he's like, I just can't feel that connection. He's, like, a little bit out with things, and I thought I recognized some of that same thought process with Zachary, and so I was like, I wonder if that's part of it.
Was anybody else notice that with your kids?
This is Rhonda, and Bridger, who is my older son, I do notice that with him. And, you know, and similar to what Laura is saying, he's a pretty brusque person, but then I hear from teachers that this is a guy who, you know, when there is someone who is underprivileged or is really in need of a friend, apparently at school, my son is the compassionate one that helps him out. But day to day, he's a pretty selfish kind of guy. So, and at the same time, I know that he's incredibly sensitive, but it's hard to reconcile the fact that he's, I mean, he just says, you know, I don't like people, I don't want to be around people, and he's not, and my other son, who has an attentive ADHD, is very, very sensitive. But I do wonder, I mean, what Laura was saying, I think that's a great question. I mean, I've wondered the same thing a lot, because it just seems that, I mean, I have a pretty small data set to draw from, but I do wonder, you know, is this part of his ADHD, or is this just his personality? I don't know. And again, you know, the question is always, and can you separate the two? So
right. So. And what does it matter to some extent? But
yeah,
right.
You know,
exactly.
You got to address it anyway. But what is the skill or the what underlies someone's ability to be thoughtful of someone else? What are the processes that are involved?
I don't think it's a skill or a process. I somehow think it's an inherent desire to connect.
Okay. Yeah, it's like I just don't. It's not like I want to do something bad to them. I don't want anything bad to happen to them. I just don't care one way or another. Like, whatever. You know, I like them. It's fine. It's,
yeah.
You know, just kind of not interested, not, you know. And so it's not thoughtless, because he can be, you know, thoughtful when he wants to. He just
when he wants
doesn't.
To, when he's motivated.
Yeah, and it's,
when there's
yeah.
something about it that interests
yeah.
him or compels him.
Yeah.
So
yes.
ultimately, it's still, when I say what's the skill behind it, to be thoughtful of someone else, you have to think about them, focus on it, plan, execute. It's several steps of executive function, actually. And
yeah.
so it actually requires some effort to sort of get yourself to activate yourself to be concerned about or attend to someone or something else.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, I'm sort of making this up, but as I think about it, it sort of makes sense that, and I see it in my daughter as well, that that's a lot of steps if she doesn't really care that much. Now,
yeah.
Like you're describing, if she cares a lot, if it's a friend who needs help, man, she's all over it.
Right.
But
she'll
she
give you
has
the
to have
of
the
motivation.
Seat,
but, yeah. Interesting.
It is really
interesting. In some ways, it's almost admirable because you think, great, so you're making a choice, so you're not affected by the feelings of other people, so you're actually using your energy wisely.
Yeah.
If you really don't care about somebody, then you don't have to feign it or pretend. You just you are making a decision in some ways, and so it's a good way to save energy.
Yeah, I always
yeah.
marvel at the fact that my daughter really doesn't do anything out of obligation or, you know, any of that, because she just doesn't even think to it, doesn't even occur to her.
Yeah. No.
That's very
being polite because of them being polite. He's polite if he feels like it, and if he doesn't, then, oh, well.
But
not that
know,
he's rude.
Said,
he's really not rude.
Having,
it's just above and beyond.
Well, having said that, the flip side of it as an adult is that sometimes you do get in your own way because you don't treat other people the way they might expect to be treated. And I was just having this conversation with my mother yesterday about one of my brothers who was diagnosed with ADD, you know, back in the dark ages in the 60s. And you know, so it was never really actively treated in the same way that, you know, we manage so intentionally now. And as an adult, I mean, he's a very productive guy in a lot of ways, but he has always sort of gotten in his own way. And it's the same issue you guys are describing, is that he contributes a lot. He's a volunteer in the community and yada, yada, yada. But he's sort of a selfish guy, you know? And that's it's to me, when I look at him, there's no question that it's how his ADD has shown up and never really been managed.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the clarity for anybody in this conversation?
Teach them stuff.
Say it again. You're on it.
Lara said teaching them the steps for what other people will assume that they will already know just based on social cues and
yeah.
expectations.
Yeah. Mm. So it always comes back to making direct what we assume, right? To teaching the steps, to making it clear that this is step-by-step how we might respond to something instead of assuming they're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
Which also goes for the social skills. Interesting. So let me bring us back to sort of to tonight, and I'm not sure whether you want to pull from that for what you want to focus on this week or something else, but what do you guys want to focus on this week? And thank you, Laura. That's a really interesting conversation. What do each of you want to focus on?
Are you talking about within the topic of compassion?
Well, whatever you want to address in your family dynamic right now, and we'll see whether compassion addresses it or something else. But, you know, where are you taking aim this week? What's next on your agenda? Wheels turning. Do you want me to call on someone or?
I thought Rhonda was going to speak, so I didn't want to interrupt. But this is Lana, so I'll jump in. I mean, this week my husband and I are planning to talk to our son about some homework stuff. Some, you know, like as. The break kind of is now time to kind of regroup and think about our morning routine and as well as some structure changes around homework and his tutor. So there's kind of we're kind of in a assess and tweak process this week and having a conversation where he's a part of that. So I guess compassion hasn't really been in the forefront of my mind. I mean, I certainly have answers to the questions that came out on the Monday email about this week's topic, but it's just not in the foreground of what I have to focus on this week.
That's fair. And, you know, we'll see as we get as we move forward whether pieces you can pull from it or, you know, sometimes the topic we've got is not going to be the solution to the challenge you're facing that week, and that's fine.
Right.
You got plenty of other skills to pull from.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, so Lana, it's about being in that step five rinse and repeat, right, tweaking and modifying the homework plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to acknowledge you for getting all the way to step five.
Gee, I didn't even realize I was there.
That's really
feel
nice.
Like it.
I know, it doesn't. Sometimes we sort of look up and go, oh, look what I did. But you've gone all the way through, and now you're at a point where you're sort of assessing and tweaking. That's rinse and repeat.
Mm-hmm.
So, way to go.
Works
okay,
me.
Rhonda or Laura, what do you want to focus on this week?
You know, for me, the compassion thing, that's something that I am thinking about all the time. But my question about compassion, and again, this is something that I'm doing today and I think every day, is and when looking at the things that my kids are capable of doing or not capable of doing, I always question myself and think, are these things that they are really capable of doing and I am letting them off the hook? Or am I, you know, what things am I supposed to be compassionate about and understand? And what things am I supposed to advocate for so that the rest of the world should have more compassion for people that are different, that have different capabilities and different executive functioning? And in other ways, you know, am I making excuses for my kids?
So it's that line between enabling and empowering.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
And I, you know, and I do. I think about compassion all of the time, and I would love to think that, you know, in the world that they are doing everything that they possibly could. But I do wonder. I think, you know, what are you choosing to not do this? And I'm enabling you or not?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I second guess myself on compassion all the time.
I'd love to hear that. It's a great place for us to focus. So let's hear from Laura, and then we'll move on and talk further about it, because I love what you're bringing up, which is, and the bottom line of it is that any skill over-applied becomes a deficit, right? Any strength over-emphasized can become a challenge. So we want to play to our strengths, we want to use the skills, but we don't want to overdo anything, and finding that delicate dance is a hard thing to do.
And convincing others of it as well. You know, advocating out in the world is also a challenge sometimes.
Absolutely. Especially as they get older.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
No question.
Okay. This is Laura. I think that everything just said could fit into the category. We're happy in this moment because Zachary seems to be working much harder on his homework, and he's turned in almost everything this semester, which is amazing. I hate to say that out loud, you know, like, now that I've said it, it's going to all go downhill.
No. Source positive.
Yes.
Continue to good.
I mean, and I was just looking at his grades before I came on, and I'm like, wow, there's, like, almost no zeros in this whole thing. And in the two semesters prior to this one, that semester's quarters, prior to this one, it's always just grade, zero, reduce. And so he's like, I honestly don't know exactly what's kicked in, but he's working harder, and I don't know why, but we're still trying to stay on top of it. And, you know, so the compassion part is obviously, you know, close in my mind only because of having the conversations with my brother where I was suddenly like, that's funny. That's just like Zachary. And so I was, you know, and I think just how
they react to other people. And so I think that everything that Rhonda and Lana said would be applicable right now to us.
Okay. So is there anything in particular you want to focus on, or you just want to sort of stay with
you
that
know what?
Issue of enabling versus empowering?
Yeah. I mean, and I think that that would be the main thing, to not advocate too much and not assume that he's not doing something because he can't, when actually he could, he's just choosing not to. And where that line is a really hard thing to figure out.
It is really hard. And, yeah. You know, and it reminds me of what we were talking about at the beginning of this call, before we started recording it, was that we're not always going to do our best.
Mm-hmm.
No, or we're not always going to be at our best. Even if we're doing our best, it's still not always, you can't always do your absolute best work. Some days you're going to have off days, and some days you're not going to feel like putting as much in, and then some days you're on it, right? And that is part of the human experience. And these kids are called upon to do a lot all day, every day. So they're not always going to have their best days. And recognizing that is part of our challenges. And I love the way that question sort of formed, Rhonda, is, you know, what's that line between enabling them and empowering them? Mm-hmm. So let's talk for just a little bit about compassion. And, you know, obviously it's not a new subject for anybody, and it's something we're all familiar with, so I'm not going to talk a lot about it. But I do want to touch on why I think it's so important for our kids. And there are a couple of reasons. One, because these kids have been redirected all of their lives. And because they have so often been treated with people who don't know them, or who do know them but didn't understand the ADD, with this sense of them doing it on purpose and the idea that they won't when they felt like they can't. So I think that there's a certain amount of compassion for, you know, that it's been a hard ride for them, and that it's not just that they've been constantly wrong and redirected, but that it's frustrating from their perspective to not be able to do what it is they want to be able to do. Like, they want to be able to fulfill their parents' and teachers' expectations. They want to be able to do what they see their peers doing more readily than they can. And yet they can't seem to get themselves to do it. And that's got to be an incredibly frustrating place to be, to sort of go, I think I'm smart, I should be able to do that, but why can't I remember this? You know, I thought I knew the material, and then I got into the test, and I can't remember. Or, you know, or whatever the example is. So there's a frustration that comes with living with any kind of a challenge or a disability. And I think that's a place for us really to bring the compassion, is not necessarily the compassion for what they have or haven't done, but the compassion for what it must feel like when they're not hitting their best, when they're not performing at the level that you know they're capable of, that they know they're capable of, or that you or they think that they would want to. That maybe that's the place to make the distinction here in this conversation, is not so much compassion for what they're accomplishing or not, but for just the experience of it's not only is it hard for them to do some of this stuff, but it can be hard for them not to be able to do or to achieve. Is that resonating with anybody?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. I think sometimes Zachary is like, well, I was trying to keep that long thing to memorize tonight for tomorrow, which, of course, was assigned a month ago.
Right.
And he's doing it tonight. but he was talking about it, and he said, well, someone else memorized it in 5 minutes. And I said, well, I don't know that you're going to memorize it. I mean, it's a passage. It's like a whole page of stuff in Romeo and Juliet. And I'm like, I don't know that you're going to memorize that in 5 minutes. He's like, yeah, I know, I'm really stupid. And I was like, okay, no, it's not because you're really stupid. It's because that's a lot to memorize in 5 minutes. I don't think there'll be – please don't plan 5 minutes for memorizing the entire page of Romeo and Juliet. I just need you to think about that. But his reaction was, yeah, I know, I'm too stupid. And I was like, no, that's not it. But then you automatically feel bad. So I wasn't entirely sure if he was just looking for sympathy or if he really thought that. So.
Well, so what do you think?
I think it's a combination of the two things. I think sometimes he does think he's very smart, and other times he thinks he's really stupid because he can't pass math class, but then he gets the test scores, and he's like, whoa, I'm really smart. And then, I think he's smart. I don't think he understands how he can get a D in math all year and think that he's failing and doesn't know what he doesn't understand any of it. And then he can take the test and do great. So
right.
I think he's still trying to figure it out, too. I don't think he fully understands where there are disability issues as opposed to, you know, what he does know. And I don't know. So probably a little bit of both.
So tell us about the compassion you feel for that struggle he must be having.
I think, and, you know, because I'm a special ed teacher, I see it in my students, and I see it in him. And it breaks my heart, you know, and trying to figure out, the kids are trying really hard to figure things out. And it's hard. They can't help but be wiggly. They can't help, you know, he can't help that he's not paying attention. Even when he knows he needs to pay attention, he's trying to pay attention. He just, you know, he's thinking other things and has to try to pull it back. And I think it's easy to compare yourself to other people and feel bad about yourself. And that makes me feel bad for him and them. So is
compassion the same as feeling bad for someone? And I pose this to everyone. What does it mean to feel compassion for him?
I think of feeling bad.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I think of compassion of more like empathy, and that feeling bad is more like pity.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Okay.
So I guess to differentiate those things, I say, you could say, you know, I am capable of putting myself in your place. That would be compassion or empathy. And I am trying really hard to put myself in your place.
Mm-hmm.
That's compassion. But it's not a matter of, I'm not making excuses for you, and I'm trying to feel what you feel. I think of that as compassion.
For what purpose?
Am I off base?
No, I think you're right on base. For what purpose?
For what purpose? Just so that, you know, just so that, you know, first of all, you can have an ally, somebody in your corner that says you're not a bad person or you're not incapable. So in order to be an ally to you and make you realize that you're not alone, so there's
okay.
some kind of I don't know what the word is. So that there's some we're compatriots, right? So,
right.
Like an altruistic
partners.
Reason. I think, but it's more like an altruistic reason. That's more what I'm thinking is an altruist. So again, for what purpose? For altruism and for advocacy. You know, in order to advocate for you as a parent, as an adult, then so that I can advocate for you. And I think if I were to feel compassion toward another adult, toward a peer, not as an advocate, I would do it purely for altruistic reasons, and also just to understand, just for to better my own understanding of the world and my own character.
Mm-hmm. So it's understanding the world and character and connection to another human being.
Right.
There's a
right.
generosity of spirit that you're sort of describing.
Oh, absolutely,
right?
Absolutely,
like a
yes,
kindness.
Yes.
So, and the,
right.
one of the words you use, I think that's really important, is acknowledgement. Right. So when you have
mm-hmm.
compassion for someone, what are you acknowledging?
That they're valid, that their situation has value, and that they have value.
Yeah, that they have value. Anything else comes up for anybody? So when we show compassion, we show we create a sort of an ally. We're on the same team. We acknowledge them and acknowledge their value and their experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that comes up as I was listening to you talk, Rhonda, is that when we have compassion, it enables us to set realistic expectations. It enables us to set appropriate expectations that are based on where they are, not based on shoulds.
Right.
And I hadn't really thought about it until this conversation. But that's, one of the challenges for shifting expectations, that parents are always asking is, how do I know, right? How do I know whether it's right? How do I know what's appropriate? Is that something anybody struggles with?
Right, that's what I just said earlier about what I struggle with is, how do I know that it's appropriate? Am I enabling it?
Right. So
am I enabling just, inappropriate behavior or weakness? I mean, what am I enabling versus what am I responsible to advocate for?
Right.
Yeah.
And so compassion becomes almost a vehicle to help you set expectations because it's about understanding where they are so that you can start from there to help them figure out what the next step is. I think the challenge with this whole question of, that line is to remember that we can't address everything all at the same time. That the reason we take aim is so that we're clear what we're working on and trying to improve, and that we continue to scaffold or support everything else while we focus in on that one area and try to make improvements, so that we're not trying to do everything at one time. And that's another way that we show compassion is, I know you got a lot of stuff to work on, kid, but you don't have to do it all right now. Right?
Right.
Exactly, but you do have to brush your teeth.
But you do have to brush your teeth, right.
Yes.
There's certain non...
There are certain... You have to take a shower, and you have to brush your teeth.
And you know what? That may be hard for you, too, and that's a non-negotiable. You can have compassion for the fact that it's hard to activate and have the motor coordination to get yourself up off the couch or whatever, to put the stuff on the toothbrush, brush the teeth. Like, it's a pain in the neck. Yes. And it's an expectation that you're still going to hold. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So and that's one of the things I love about compassion is that it gives us the ability to set expectations and hold them to them, as you said, as their ally instead of as their adversary. You know, you guys have all heard me say that let the system be the bad guy, right? So when you have the structure in place, you get to come from compassion and say, oh, man, I wish you could have done. I'm so sorry you didn't hit whatever that was. I'm so sorry you didn't get that done by 8 o'clock because I really wanted to play this game with you tonight, and maybe tomorrow night we can do it. That's compassion because I'm not coming to them and saying, you didn't do it by 8 o'clock, so you don't get this. And so I love that term that you brought, Rhonda. It's about creating an alliance with them, being their ally, and then working together with them to increase, improve, extend, expand their capabilities.
Right.
Love that. So what else is anybody else? What else is coming up for you guys now? Lana, Laura, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking, because that's interesting. I don't know what I'm thinking. This is Laura. Sorry, Lana, I won't talk for you. Everything you said is spot on. So I think it's clarifying to think about it that way.
Mm-hmm. say more. Clarifying to think about. And hi, Wendy. Welcome.
Well, it's clarifying, yeah, to think about, I mean, and just to remember that sometimes it is more, I mean, obviously not my snarky toothbrushing comment, but, you know, just to think about it is a little bit more, and sometimes there's things that are negotiable and sometimes there's not, and finding the difference between that and then almost aligning that with the idea that we're trying to find the right line for advocating for our children and, you know, trying to figure out where the line is, because we don't want to take away their ability to go forward with their education or with their personal issues because, you know, we're blaming it on a disability. But at the same time, we want to make sure that they're getting the equal chances in order to become successful and to feel successful about themselves and how we look at that.
So I this is Rhonda, and I agree with what Laura is saying, and I kind of would summarize it even to make it a little bit shorter and say, so where from here? So what? So if we have compassion and now we know what it is, so how do we take that knowledge and that sensitivity and how do we use it in a way that is helpful to ourselves and our family and our kids?
Okay. So answer your question. What's your clarity around that and that now?
I think for me, I guess, and this is all on the fly, and, you know, we introverts don't do so well on the fly out loud. But I think for me, I guess I think that the compassion is still just having the sensitivity of thinking, am I doing this thing? Am I making these choices from a compassionate place? Am I doing it for the right reasons? Am I being helpful? Is it actually coming from a good place? And can I be a better parent and advocate for my child? Mm-hmm. So I think that the awareness in and of itself is tremendously helpful. Slow it down. Think about it. How am I helping? Am I helping or hurting? Is this compassionate? Am I making an excuse? Am I just, you know, what is this for? And I think it would probably help me to scream a lot less. Not that I scream very much,
yeah.
But when I do, it's pretty brutal. And I think if nothing else, that's maybe a bit of
that's
it.
That's huge. Well, and what I heard and what you just said is two things. Is that one, it informs your position. So having compassion, sort of, if it's your go-to place, it sort of sets a condition of kindness around whatever you're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's at least what I heard you say. Does that feel like what you were saying?
Yeah, it sets a condition of kindness, yes.
Okay. And then the other thing is that it gives you, it's a vehicle for setting those expectations in a way that lets you be on the same team with them, right? So part of it is about the context, and then part of it is about the doing, the details. So it sort of comes from both angles.
Right.
It's a lot more complex than it seems like it would be on the surface, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
yes.
Compassion, we think of it so simply like it's just an everyday part of our world, but wow. What's available for us when we approach them from compassion? Just, and not even for them, what's available for us when we approach them from compassion?
Maybe taking the idea of empathy and then putting ourselves into their shoes and trying to imagine what it's like helps us to figure out where to help and when to help, as opposed to just making assumptions.
So when you do that, when you put yourself in their shoes and sort of let that inform you, how do you think it'll shift your decision making?
Good question. I'm not an introvert, so I can't blame it on that. But I'd like to. I don't know. I think just taking more time and processing it, I don't know. That's it. I almost need to process that longer before I can figure out what my answer is going to be.
Yeah, well, sometimes, you know, in coaching we have what we call inquiries, and an inquiry is a question. Like at the end of a coaching session, we'll often leave somebody, instead of with homework, they'll have an inquiry. And it's sort of a question to ponder for the week. So maybe this is your inquiry.
Yes, I think it may be.
Right, is how does it inform your decision making?
Elaine, did you... In working with Diane, we did some. We had a conversation about energy levels, about the 1 through 7 energy levels. Have on these sessions, have you guys ever talked about those? Has this ever been a topic of conversation?
No, it's not part of the core strategies we use for PSS because it's complicated and it sort of requires the 1-to-1 conversation.
Yes, yeah. Well, then and then what I would say, and maybe you can. Yeah, maybe you can rephrase this as that as far as levels of energy go, this is closer to a level 7, right?
Yes.
That well, coming
that
from
direction.
A place coming yeah maybe a 5 or 6, but coming from a place. So you say what is available for us when we approach from compassion, and I think that is definitely a higher energy level to look at the world from.
Right, compassion is actually level 4.
So, oh,
and for everybody else who has no idea what we're talking about,
yes,
there are there's some work that we do with called the 7 levels of energy, and it's in our private clients we do a leadership assessment that's an index that we do with parents that's actually an online survey that you do and then you get the results and we process it. And the idea is that there are 7 levels of energy from 1 to 7 that all humans function on all the time. And we all have a little bit of all of them. 7 being, you know, the highest absolute passion, non-judgment, the yogi on the mountain somewhere, right? None of us spend a lot of time in 7. Many of us spend more time than we'd like in the bottom 2 levels, which are called catabolic. Those are sort of... Diane wouldn't use the word negative. I think it's easier for those of us who don't do this work a lot to understand it that way. But the catabolic energy is either the energy of the victim or anger. And those are the sort
of stress-producing.
Stress-producing energies that we bounce back and forth between. And then the next levels of energy, as they go up, level 3 is the energy around forgiveness and responsibility. Then level 4 is compassion and concern, caring. Level 5 is peace and reconciliation. Level 6 is joy and synthesis. And then, as I say, level 7 is non-judgment. And as it goes up from levels 3 to 7, it's called anabolic. It's an anabolic energy versus a catabolic energy. Catabolic energy is stress-producing. Anabolic is more peaceful and calm. So that's a sort of a lot of information in a really short summary. And I've got a chart we may be able to share. I got to find out from Diane. But what you're pointing to, Rhonda, that is so cool is that the whole point of compassion, of using compassion, is that it brings you out of that place where you're looking at your kids' issues, either from that place of anger and frustration and conflict, or from that place of sort of apathy where you just want to give up. And neither of those are a really productive or constructive way to help. So when you pull out of that and be in compassion, then you're able to help them and yourself to manage what you're dealing with in a different way. Does that sort of address it a little bit, Rhonda?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking, is that the compassion is still it is not a stress-producing emotion, an energy level. It's a very solid, that's what I think of it as. It's a solid place to be where you can still think and you can still be helpful to yourself and to people around you.
Right. Right. And be kind to get results. And so it's a feel-good way to go through as opposed to when we get ourselves stressed and agitated, which is a not-so-feel-good way to approach a situation.
Right.
So any thoughts or questions? I know that's a lot to sort of throw in here, but any thoughts or questions on that? I'll do my best. Diane's really the expert in energy. We'll have to do a workshop on it. Maybe we'll do a webinar on energy at some point, because it is fascinating, really cool stuff.
Yeah, it is.
So we're near the end of time. It's been, you know, we haven't done as much coaching, but it's been a really interesting conversation. So I want to ask you all to stop. And, Wendy, I know you just got here, but I do hope you'll go back and listen to the call, because it's really been an interesting call tonight. And so let's sort of, as we wrap up, let's look at what do you feel like you focused on this evening, right? What's your clarity? What did you get clear about tonight? And how can you apply this to your life right now? Just take a minute with those. Give you an extra second for the introvert.
And, you know, what's funny is, you know, being the introvert over here is, like, I feel like I've certainly spoken more than my share during this conversation, but I think what I got clear on during this conversation is that compassion is always a good thing. So you said having compassion sets a condition of kindness, and I can't. Those are your words, Elaine, and I can't think of a place where that is not desirable.
Yeah, certainly not with our kids. I mean, I can't think of it anywhere, but certainly not when it comes to our kids.
Right.
Because you can even be kind and compassionate when you're holding fast to a firm rule.
Right.
Well, this is Lara, and I think my thought about it is that it touches a lot more parts of your life than just how you feel about strangers next door or about other kids in your class. You know, when I'm thinking about compassion, not just for him or about him or my students, but how it affects him in his schooling and how it affects the way he deals with other people and how I relate to him. And so I think it just, as opposed to just my looking at the outside on it all, I kind of think that it's bigger than just one topic and one word. And it affects so many different aspects of our life.
Yeah.
Mine towards him, his towards me, you know.
And we haven't even talked about compassion towards ourselves.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I hadn't even thought about.
when I work with adults with ADD, one of the very first things we usually end up working on, and when they come into work, not on parenting issues, but on their own ADD, it usually has some variation of teaching them to, this is what I call it, put the stick down. Because they have spent their whole lives hitting themselves over the head with a stick for all the things they do wrong. And I know this because I lived it, because I wasn't diagnosed until I was 40, right? And you spend your whole life going, you idiot, you stupid, how did you do that? Why did you do that? I can't believe you did that. And so just the process of teaching them to have compassion for themselves and to put the stick down and to stop beating themselves up is enormous relief. And
wow,
we all do it for ourselves in different ways. You know, whether we're ADD or not. So that's the place that I think I would point you as well, Lara, is not just how it applies to all of this other stuff, but don't leave yourself out of the mix. So anybody else, what did you get clear on tonight? And how can you apply it? Lana, you got anything that's bubbling for you?
I've been listening in, and I mean, I'm actually a little confused. I think for me, when I get compassionate, or at least I'm thinking it's compassion coming from me, sometimes I can become less structured with my boundaries when I start to feel compassion for my son and what's going on for him. I may relax boundaries. And I'm thinking that I think I want to pay attention to that and see, you know, to really, you know, it was actually the toothbrushing thing was really smart, because between brushing teeth, showering, and putting retainers in, and it's late at night, and, you know my son's tired, and like, okay, he got his evening medication that he has to take, and like, I know that got done, but then, you know, he wants to read for a while before he brushes his teeth, and it's like I have to stand there and drill him to get into the bathroom to do it, and it gets really iffy, and I don't really know how to tease out being compassionate versus not being a, you know, hovering over him like, you get in the bathroom right now, and I don't know. I'm actually really confused.
Okay. And,
so
and you know what I'm
it's
okay
It's a quandary
with,
question. It's a ponder
confused.
Question
yeah.
for the week, I guess.
Sometimes pondering it is not a bad thing. But what
mm-hmm.
you just said really helped me frame it. So let me frame it a little differently, see if this helps. Compassion
mm-hmm.
is not about easing up on what the expectations are. Compassion
right.
is about approaching the expectations in a kind way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so,
that's,
you know, and sometimes if it's late at night, am I going to say, I forget, you know, we get home at midnight and everybody's exhausted. Am I going to make him get up and get out of bed and brush his teeth? Probably not. You know,
mm-hmm.
but am I going to set the expectation? Am I going to say, make sure you brush your teeth before he goes up there? Yes, even though I know he's exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I might even say, I know you're tired. Please try to remember to go brush your teeth. But that I know you're tired is the compassion piece, actually, the acknowledgement.
Right. Yeah, I think I get to that, but I think it's the part after that of, you know, for me to then just walk away and go get ready for bed myself or whatever, that's where I feel like I kind of lose it because, or lose control over the situation because he won't do it, you know. He a lot of times he just tries to not do it and...
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
It's sort of a different it's a different conversation.
It's a different conversation. Yeah,
setting the expectations versus holding them accountable to it. Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right, and it is a totally different. But I get the confusion because I don't want to confuse him. Somebody started the conversation with there's a difference between compassion and pity.
Mm-hmm.
And so compassion is not about enabling. It's not about not holding people accountable to whatever the reasonable expectations are. It's just about doing
mm-hmm.
it nicely. I used to say when my kids were little, there's a nice way to say that and a not nice way. And compassion is the nice way. Right?
Mm-hmm. And, but it doesn't change the boundaries or the expectations. It's still
yeah.
how did I present it? Where am I coming from? Yeah.
Right. Right. The expectations are the expectations, and unless they need to be changed or modified, you know, based on the circumstances. But compassion is not about that. It's just about how you approach it, really. Or I think that's what we've come to tonight. And this has been, I want to thank everybody for a really interesting, fascinating conversation. I loved it, and I hope it was useful for all of you, because I think it was really useful, and I love it, and I love it when that happens. It always happens, but tonight in particular. Wendy, do you have, I know you came in late, and it's a lot on your plate. Is there anything you want to say or share before we close off for tonight?
No, well, I guess, you know, I kind of had a rough week this week. excuse me. But, yeah, Sean was getting bullied a little bit there, and so tonight was his first karate class. So I had to,
love karate.
You know, well, we've been talking about it for a while, but we decided to just try a trial month and see if he likes it and if he can wants to maintain that. So I guess that's where my compassion was at, even though it's not ideal with a situation that I have, you know, it has to come from him, and he needs to, it just maybe will help him speak up and feel better about himself. So it's just...
Sorry, it's been such a hard week.
Yeah.
Really?
It's a little, yeah. But that's okay. That happens sometimes.
Yep.
Just move forward.
So anybody, just as we're closing up, you know, I sort of forgot to ask, are there any action steps that you want to take, or is there anything you need to do to set yourself up for success? So as we're wrapping up tonight, is there any sort of final commitments that anybody wants to make? It's been a more theoretical conversation, so maybe yes, maybe no. And did you write down, Laura, did you write down the inquiry for yourself?
No, I did not, but that's a good reminder. I will write that down. I'm thinking about it now, but in 3 hours, I may have forgotten it, so it's probably a good idea.
I've got to write down.
What I would have asked Zachary to do, will you remember it? Did you write it down? Is it in your assignment book?
Right. Sometimes I'll change the question to, how do you plan to remember?
Yeah.
How will you remember? So, any sort of final words? Sheila, I see that you just jumped on, and we're all just about to jump off.
Oh, did I get the time wrong? I did.
I think so. But I will encourage you to use, because you've got the time booked now, to go back and listen maybe to the call from midday to day. But if you want to stay on and chat for just a minute, I'm happy to do that with you.
Okay.
But I want to honor everybody's time because we're after 9.
Right.
Thank you. And I want to wish you all a wonderful couple of weeks. And for those of you going on to spring break, enjoy it. And just a reminder to reach out to each other on the forum and get the support you need from each other there as well. And I'm very curious to hear where we come after the inquiry. Hey, Laura, can you frame the inquiry for me that you're going to work on in the next couple of weeks or think about?
Well, I think that what I was thinking was that I'm trying to figure out how compassion comes to play in the different parts of our life and the interactions between Zachary and myself, my husband, and in his school, in his day-to-day life, and potentially compassion to myself, but I'll have to think about that even longer.
Okay. All right, I've just sort of written it down to capture it for you. Okay. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you. All right.